The LARB Radio Hour is a free weekly podcast of the Los Angeles Review of Books, a reader-supported nonprofit publication. To support our continued work on this show, in print and online, please consider donating or joining as a member today at lareviewofbooks.org/radiohour. Hello, and welcome to the LARB Radio Hour, brought to you by reader-supported LA Review of Books. I'm your host, Eric Newman, and I'm solo in the virtual recording studio today. On this week's show, I'm talking with director Morgan Neville about his new film, Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts, now streaming on Apple TV+. In just a little over 3 hours, Morgan's two-part documentary looks at the meteoric rise of the comedy icon before settling into an intimate peek into his post-stand-up career that brings viewers into Martin's private life in New York as he's prepping to return to the stage with longtime friend and collaborator Martin Short on a comedy tour that's set to kick off later this year. I've long been fascinated by Steve Martin, and not only because of his memorable performances as everything from one half of the Wild and Crazy Guys that my husband remembers from SNL to his role in Parenthood and so many other iconic films from my youth, but also because he manages to be so wholesome, kind, and caring without ever being boring. In that way, Martin has always felt like a breath of fresh air at a moment when rancor and animosity seem to be taking the center of our cultural stage. In the interview that follows, Morgan and I talk about how this documentary came to be, the treasure trove of archival he drew upon to illustrate Steve's life right up to the moment when he departed the stand-up stage, and what he learned about this private, kind, and complicated icon over the course of filming and editing the movie. Without further ado, let's get to that interview. I'm thrilled to be on the line with Morgan Neville. Morgan is an Oscar, Grammy, and Emmy Award-winning director and producer, so just one shy of an EGOT, known for his work on probing cultural documentaries, including the Fred Rogers doc, Won't You Be My Neighbor, which I spoke to Morgan about back in 2018, and which then went on to be one of the best-reviewed and highest-grossing documentaries of all time. He's also the director behind the Oscar Award-winning 20 Feet from Stardom, Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain, Best of Enemies, Keith Richards' Under the Influence, and many, many more. He joins me today to discuss his latest film, Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts, which is currently streaming on Apple TV+. As the title suggests, the story of the comedy legend's life is broken up into two 90-minute films that are at once distinct and complementary. The first, told entirely through archival clips, many of which viewers will see for the first time, is guided by insightful voiceover interviews that map Martin's meteoric rise from struggling magician to rock star-level stand-up comedian, ending with Martin's abrupt departure from the stage to pursue a career as a performer on TV and in iconic films. The second documentary brings us up to the present, as Martin finds himself in a quite different place as an older and happier man, now preparing to return to the stage on a forthcoming comedy tour with legendary collaborator and close friend Martin Short. Probing and insightful in a way that only Neville's camera can capture, Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts, brings viewers a fresh portrait of a well-known comedy legend. Morgan, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
To just get us started off, can you talk a little bit about how this particular project came together?
I had always heard that Steve Martin would never make a documentary. I know because I think I asked him once. I think everybody asked him once to do a documentary. And I mean, this is many, many years ago. And particularly when I read his memoir, Born Standing Up, which I loved, I just thought, God, this would be a great documentary. And the story I heard was that there was a producer that lived in Steve's building in New York, and he would see Steve in the elevator every 6 months, say, and would say, Steve, you should do a documentary. And Steve would always say, no, not interested. And he saw him about 3 years ago in the elevator and said, Steve, you should make a documentary. And Steve said, maybe. And that word leaked out in the documentary world. And I just said, yeah, I'd love to meet with him to talk about it. I mean, I like most kids in my generation, was a massive Steve Martin fan and memorized his albums. And I, even when I was 12, I badgered my dad into driving me to Las Vegas to see Steve do stand-up, which turned out to be some of his last stand-up shows as the Wild and Crazy Guy. But beyond that, I actually think that Steve was also somebody who was very intellectual too. He was a novelist, a playwright, an art collector. And I loved that part of his story too. So I felt like here's a subject that works in many different ways. And I kind of love the high culture, low culture thing that Steve's done in his career. And it's exactly what I like to do in my work too. So I was excited. And then we had lunch and we didn't even talk about the documentary much. We just talked about kids and art and New York and things. And then at the end, he was like, okay, let's do this. And that was it.
That's amazing. You know, I'm also interested in how the sheer amount of space that you had in this particular project, as you're describing, right? Steve Martin has such a unique and kind of octopus-like story. There's so many different things that he's done. I'm interested in how, you know, you have across the two parts of this documentary, you've got a total runtime of just over 3 hours. It struck me as that's nearly double the time of your other documentary features, like 20 Feet from Stardom, for example, the Keith Richards biopic, and Won't You Be My Neighbor. I imagine that that must have been a very freeing feeling to kind of know that you could get into the all of it. But I also wonder if that ever felt overwhelming or how it impacted your documentary work from kind of a narrative perspective.
Well, the thing is, I ended up making 2 90-minute movies. So that was how I dealt with it, you know. And it was something that I was working on this for 6 months before it kind of occurred to me that I was making 2 films. Because in the beginning, I was fortunate enough to just start making it and not know what it was going to be. And everybody said to me, is it a feature? Is it a miniseries? So like, what is it? And so I was just working on it. And I just kept having this feeling of everything going in 2 different directions. And one direction was the first film, which is his origin story and the stand-up career, which is this great story with the beginning, middle, and end of him struggling for 15 years to figure out how to be a successful comedian and then exploding in popularity and then quietly walking away from it without telling anybody at the age of 35. Like, that story was a great story. But as Steve says, to him, that story is like a footnote to the rest of his life, you know. But I think, and that's very modest of Steve, and Steve is one of the most modest people I've ever met. Like, he really doesn't brag or even want to think about bragging, because his stand-up career was huge. It was huge.
And he was at the top of it before he walked away and never did another live act in that way again for 30 years.
Yeah, right? I mean, he was a rock star. He was outdrawing Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles, touring in giant stadiums, you know, or giant arenas. I mean, comedians had not done that before at that level. It was big, even though Steve tends to forget how big it was, or he doesn't want to remember just how big it was. And then at the same time, I was just hanging out with Steve, and he invited us to go on the road with him and Marty Short, working on their comedy, and I was filming him recording. And like, the Steve I was meeting and the Steve I was seeing was so different from the Steve of the 1970s and even the 80s, of who he was as a person and as a comedian then. And I kept trying to figure out how to kind of reconcile those things. And I finally said, well, why don't I just let them be 2 different films in that way? And it's in a way, because Steve's 2 different people. Steve is not the same person he was back then. You know, and Adam Gopnik from The New Yorker says in the second film, Steve has changed more than any person I've ever met. That is actually a very profound statement. Like, Steve really is a different person from who he was back then. I mean, you talk about octopus, but the metaphor in my head, I always think about is a tree, because I feel like the first 35 years of his life is this, it's the trunk, it's this singular, solitary journey to figure out comedy. And it's the cerebral journey and hard, hard work to do it by himself. And suddenly, when he walks away from comedy and goes into film, but goes into many things, it's like the branches go everywhere. Suddenly, his life goes in many different directions. And that's And then the Steve of the early days was such a lonely guy, the literal lonely guy. But Steve today is surrounded by people, a wife, child, Marty Short, a cartoonist, Harry Bliss, he works with a band. Steve loves working with people now and loves being with people now. And I just found that so different and so interesting. And so then I literally made two films. I had two different editors who weren't allowed to look at the other film. I had two different composers, two different graphics companies. Like, I really wanted each film to be a standalone film in that way. And then at the end, I kind of dropped the veil between the two, and we all kind of looked at them and just made sure they harmonized with each other. But so in my mind, actually, I made two 90-minute films.
That's so funny to hear you say that, because another thing that struck me about the movement between the two films, which obviously I and many of our listeners will be watching in sequence, right? So they don't see the kind of siloed way in which they were produced. But there's such an interesting formal shift that I can see actually reflected in what you're describing as these two moves. Like, the first part was so fascinating to me as somebody that has worked a lot in archival, because this documentary, the first part, significant parts of the second part, but the first part is 100% archival. So none of the kind of things that documentarians usually hinge on, for example, putting your kind of A-list interview subjects on screen with lower thirds and all that, they never appear. They're just kind of VO that's running over this incredible wealth of archival stills and clips, which it struck me only in seeing that part of the documentary is something I'm really not used to seeing. And then you get into the second part, which feels much more like a kind of embedded POV. And we see the kind of the interview subjects and their settings and all of that. And now that hearing you speak a little bit before, I'm wondering if part of that formal shift, which I'd love to hear you talk about what that felt like as maybe perhaps the one person that was working on them both, as a reflection of kind of Steve as a siloed person, right? Steve the career, Steve the comedian, Steve the striver. And then the second part, which is Steve and relationships, both actually his marriages, but also his relationships with others.
Absolutely. I've never made a 100% archival film before. And I had to be sure I had the archival goods to be able to pull that off. And it took me a long time to be able to know that I had that, but we kept discovering amazing stuff. A lot of the footage in the first film has never been seen, which is amazing. And I'm really happy about, including footage from a video camera he had where he would film himself in, you know, the late 60s and early 70s doing stand-up in his house and things like that. But there's also something about doing 100% archival doc that it makes the film more present tense. So you're kind of with the character in real time as they're living through it, I think, in archival in that way. In a way, I think after Steve is struggling for years and years and years to get his comedy act off the ground, you start to wonder, like, is this guy ever going to make it? You know, like, I hope, you know, you kind of forget that. And I think when you get to the second film, it's retrospective. It's present day, but it's looking back then. And so there's a different energy to that. But beyond that, I actually made a list of how to think about each film separately. And some of the things were, you know, the first film is cerebral. The second film is emotional. The first film is about self-creation. The second film is about self-discovery. It's these, they are two different journeys. It's the career journey. And really, the thing that it hinges on is the pivot in the middle of his life. And what that pivot is, essentially, is that Steve grew up in a house that didn't have a lot of affection in it. And so he was attracted to show business because people would applaud and laugh and show him affection. And like a lot of performers, you think, oh, the more famous I become and the more applause I get, the happier I'll be because I'm getting shown more love. So Steve becomes the biggest stand-up in the world. And guess what? It doesn't make him happy. Like, that's not the thing that's going to fix it. And so he then has to figure out how to fix that part of his life. I mean, I think of the second film as the pursuit of happiness. It's this journey to not just be happy, but to really like work on it. Like, he has a very fraught relationship with his dad when he's young. But when he's in his 40s, he takes his dad out to lunch every single week, even though they have this tough relationship, just because he wants to redefine that relationship for himself. He goes into therapy. He reads self-help books. I mean, he really works at it. He even takes a break from making movies for a time in the mid-90s just to really concentrate on this. And he starts writing plays. Some of these one-act plays he wrote are basically art therapy for him to work through his feelings about his family, which is kind of amazing. You know, the amount of, I find that actually really inspirational, of like, oh, you can actually really change the course of your emotional wiring if you work at it hard enough.
You're listening to the LARB Radio Hour. We now return to our conversation with Morgan Neville, director of Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts.
The other thing, in a related way, you know, it strikes me so much about that early, the first part of the documentary, is that his early career is actually a quite meandering search for an audience, motivated by a lot of the kind of psychodynamics that you're talking about. But then it's followed by what feels like a real, and I guess this is probably somewhat true of a number of kind of famous people's stories, but it's a rocket ship ride to the top. Yet at the same time, as I'm watching these kind of old archival, which what I do appreciate too, is you can really see him workshop. His comedy can come off as somewhat like off the cuff or very organic, but he's, and I'm not saying that it's not, but he's very strategic. Like he's a very thoughtful comedian and somebody that clearly like really worked on the bits. But it also strikes me that his comedy is so unique and so bizarre and off the wall. And the word that he uses frequently in that first segment is stupid, right? And in that way, it seems kind of a miracle that it hit with such a broad audience. And I'm wondering if making the film kind of gave you any sense of why he's so universally embraced as a kind of national comedic touchstone, and one that I think also threads a very difficult line between never being a square, but also being, for lack of a better word, somewhat wholesome. Like, I remember Steve Martin from Parenthood, and he was like the dad.
Yes.
Also very interesting based on his own relationship with his father. But do you have any sense of just kind of what was it about Steve Martin that just clicked in such a massive way?
It was a lot of things. I mean, a lot of what was happening in comedy in the first half of the 70s was, you know, biting and political and speaking to the times, and great comedians like Richard Pryor and George Carlin and, you know, others who were doing political humor, drug humor, all kinds of things. And Steve, he said when he was doing stand-up in the early 70s, like he would mention Richard Nixon and he would get, you know, people cheering just for the kind of recognition of, like, it was an easy laugh, like too easy for him. And so he kind of built this act that is really both smart but incredibly naive at the same time. Like there's nothing cynical in his act. It's like very, the only person who is made fun of is himself, you know, really, that he's...
And the situation of being on stage, that's another big part of it.
I mean, really, yeah. His stand-up act was performance art. It was a character who thought he was brilliant, but who was not good. And so it was a satire of show business and a satire of all kinds of things. But also he had this idea, which we talk about in the film, which I think is kind of brilliant, of not giving punchlines. You know, that the idea, if you just build tension, which is what comedy is based on, and you never give the punchline, which is the release, that people are just going to laugh randomly because they have to let go of that tension. And so you get this kind of like rolling, giddy laughter, and people don't know why they're laughing. And that was so much of what Steve was doing. And I know, because I was a kid at the time and I loved that comedy, that it also was a comedy that played on multiple levels. So if you were a 10-year-old, it was funny, you know, and you didn't know why. And if you were my dad, you thought it was really funny and you got it in a way. You got what he was doing in a way on a much more sophisticated level, but it played on all those levels. So at the same time, Steve's on Saturday Night Live and he's doing clubs and concerts and everything. He's in the Muppet movie. He's on the cover of Dynamite magazine. You know, he was on the Muppet Show. He was doing all these things that comedians were not doing, you know, working on these different levels. And so in that way, it just became, hit the culture at that moment too. By the late 70s, the culture had changed enough that everybody just, it was something that was fresh and funny and not heavy in that way, and it exploded. And Steve could have ridden that out for the rest of his life. But to him, once people got the joke of what his act was about, then he could change the bits, but it was the same act. And he just found that to be a dead end. He actually felt trapped in that character. And so in 1980, the biggest stand-up in the world, he quits and he doesn't tell anybody. He just stops doing the wild and crazy guy, which I find both amazing, but also totally Steve. But again, that's this moment where the two films pivot, because it's where his life pivots and everything kind of changes after that. And he goes on to be this, I mean, his film career is actually really interesting too, because it starts as kind of an extension of what his stand-up persona was, and it gradually builds into something where he becomes like America's dad. You know, he becomes that character that everybody knows. And that is so interesting because, as you say, and we explored this in the second film, that he's America's dad, but he's anything but America's dad in real life. You know, he isn't really capable of being a dad at that point. And in a way, I actually think a lot of his film work was also kind of art therapy for him.
Certainly, L.A. Story, I'd never thought about that way until watching your documentary, that movie is also, at least in part, about Steve Martin looking for love or looking for connection and hoping that in L.A. Story, the spirit of the city will kind of push him into being in a relationship that maybe doesn't fall naturally for him.
Yeah, and even there's a clip in the documentary of him at the time talking about L.A. Story, where he says, you know, the world's not romantic like that, but it's nice to think it could be. And I think that's how Steve felt at the time. I don't think he would say that now. I think he is a big believer in romance now. I mean, he's so happy now. He's so in love with his wife and his daughter in a way that he keeps saying, like, I can't believe how this story ended for me. Like, this was not supposed to happen. Like he's amazed by it. But it's interesting because he is a deeply romantic person who I think never quite believed it until now.
I mean, to shift gears just a little bit and talk about maybe another major romance in Steve's life, and one that is, as much as his wife, the kind of focal point of the second part of the documentary, is that deep and abiding relationship between Steve Martin and Martin Short. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that relationship and what it was like observing the two of them together while you were filming.
I have to say, filming the two of them together was some of the most fun I've ever had shooting a documentary. I mean, the first days we shot with him and Marty, they were going over jokes to kind of refresh their act because they hadn't done their act in a year and a half because of COVID. And they've been saving jokes and they had 138 pages of jokes that they were going through. And Steve said, do you want to film us going through jokes? And I was like, yes, I do want to film you going through jokes. And it was so much fun. But what I observed with the two of them is that Steve on his own can be serious and, you know, reserved. And the moment Marty walks into the room, I can physically feel Steve relax. It just brings out something. And Marty is the most improvisational person and comedian, you know, so he obviously is excellent at that. But I actually think Steve gets way funnier too when Marty walks in the room because he can play with him. And it's really, Steve has this brotherly relationship with Marty. Steve doesn't have a brother himself, but that Marty and Steve tease each other like brothers and have this relationship that I think Steve loves. And the fact that I think Steve spent so much of his life kind of being being alone, being judged alone, being the guy on the poster, the guy on the stage. And I just know how much he likes being able to share that. I mean, share both the burden and the rewards of that. It's interesting. Jerry Seinfeld says in the film, like, comedians don't do that. They don't go from a single act to a double act. They always go the other way. And for Steve, I don't think he could imagine doing it any other way. I mean, there's no way he would go back to doing stand-up alone. But the two of them have what has got to be one of the great relationships in the history of comedy, because they just fit each other so well. And it's interesting because I think Steve, in his heart, is a writer, really. And Marty is a performer, you know. But if you think of Steve's career, you know, he started as a writer on this Mother's Brothers show. He wrote short stories from the beginning. I mean, his first group were compiled into Cruel Shoes, but he'd been writing those since the 60s. And then he wrote novels and plays and movies and cartoons and songs, you know, that Steve, I think, really thinks as a writer first, and Marty is a performer first. And I just think that works so well together.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm fascinated by, like you said, he's so multi-talented. He's a comedian, he's a novelist, a playwright, musician, and composer, among many other things, with seemingly an endless kind of capacity for exploring expression. But as we kind of wrap up here, I'm curious about what your experience making now a number of documentaries, including some of the ones that I had mentioned at the top, about entertainers. And I'm curious about what that's taught you about the kind of psychology of the entertainer or the experience of fame, if that's kind of given you any interesting insights into kind of the world of the people that orbit the stage variously conceived, let's say.
It has. The thing is, fame is actually not very interesting. So even though right. I've made films about a lot of famous people, fame itself, I don't find that interesting. I mean, it's a dark force and can be if you don't fight against it. And certain people like Anthony Bourdain, it was something that changed the course of his life in a way that he couldn't always handle. But other people do a better job managing it. But I feel like, in a way, I'm trying to make a film that's in spite of the celebrity of a character. That to me, even though this is a film about Steve's life and career, and you learn about those things, to me, what I identified most with Steve was the human stuff, which is the stuff about how we work on our craft or try and be creative, how we deal with our emotions, how we deal with our families. I always tend to kind of gravitate towards those things in a character. And in that way, I actually find Steve very relatable. And that I wasn't entirely expecting. But yeah, that's what I took away from it. And I hope people take that away from it and watching that it's, even though it's Steve Martin, it's also lowercase Steve Martin.
Is that actually, just a very quick follow-up, is that also how you think in terms of the structure and narrative unfolding of documentary when you go into a project, is kind of what is that human element, that major question, let's say, or philosophical problem that can kind of structure not only the production side, but also the kind of storytelling and post?
I mean, it's something I always think about. You know, I'm never going into a project thinking, how do I list off all the things this person did? Because I actually find that not good storytelling. I mean, that's the kind of Wikipedia version of a career. I always think of what's the story that essentializes who this person is or the thing that made them who they are. Or in that way, I often skip over big parts of people's lives because making documentary is really reductive. You know, you're not writing a book. You really don't have that much time to try and explain a person, you know. And again, I never feel like I'm comprehensive because you can't be. So you shouldn't even try. Like, to me, it's all about essence. It's like, if I can just glimpse somebody's soul, or if I can just feel like I'm getting the essence of who this person is, or I really feel like I understand this person more, that's what I care about way more than what they did. And so at least that's how I approach film. And hopefully people like it.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Morgan Neville, director most recently of Steve, a documentary on the life and work of Steve Martin, now streaming on Apple TV+.
Thanks for listening to the LARB Radio Hour. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. If you like the show, please rate us on Apple Podcasts to help us get the word out. And we'd love to hear from you. The producers at the LARB Radio Hour are Medea Ocher, Kate Wolf, and Eric Newman. Our executive producer is Alan Minsky. Our sound engineer is Matea Baim. Editorial production by Jake Levins. Our intro music was written and performed by Imogen Teasley-Vaughton.